Those are live. Hey, we're glad you're here with us. Excited for another Sunday. What a great Sunday. It's good to see people greeting each other and the joy I'm sure going on in this room as well as Wilshire Live. God continues to do amazing things in our midst, and it's a joy to be here and to worship our God, an amazing God that we have. If you're new and joining us, we are in the middle of a sermon series called The Center. And if you're new, each and every day that you come, you can enter right in without having missed anything. We're looking at individual stories throughout the Gospel of Mark. And if you don't know what the Gospel of Mark is, that's okay. We are glad you are here, and we will have Bibles up on the screen, or you can grab one of the big blues in front of you. And if you don't have a Bible, please take that home. That is our gift to you. So we will look at one of the just famous stories in the Gospel of Mark, and we're in Mark 6, chapter 6, verse 30. And so really, this is the feeding of the 5,000. And so this is told throughout the Gospels, and we hear this story time and time again, but it's a story that I think is so profound that we can miss certain subtleties of it if we don't read the text slowly and if we aren't settling in and listening to what God is saying. So let's read God's word. Would you join me? If you don't have the Bible, you can follow along on the screens. We will be, again, chapter 6, verse 30. It says, the apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then because so many were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. Jesus said from the beginning, he's got his disciples and he had just sent them out earlier, and then he brings them and they're teaching and they're reporting everything he had done, and then he says, come, let's go get some rest. And so we've talked about that throughout this series, the importance of finding rest and getting away with God. And so Jesus values this and says, come, let's go, let's get away and let's rest. And so they decide to go, verse 32. So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But, verse 33, but many saw them leaving and recognized them and ran on foot from all of the towns and got there ahead of them. I love that. Jesus is teaching, and these people are so hungry for Jesus' teaching, they can't get enough, and so the masses are following Jesus, and what do? Jesus and his disciples go away, and what we see is that this crowd runs so fast on foot that they beat Jesus and his disciples there. They were pursuing Jesus. They wanted to learn more from Jesus, and so we see right here, continuing in the story, when Jesus lands in verse 34, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. Jesus gets out of the boat and he realizes here's these people that are like sheep without a shepherd. And why is that? Is it because there were a lack of religious leaders at the time? We learn in the Gospel of Luke that they had so many religious leaders that they had a platoon system. And so they had a whole system designed for these religious leaders and how they would teach, and the people would learn from them. Yet, some reason, the people are still hungry for something else. The people still, what they're being taught isn't enough. And that continues to show that religion is not enough. What is enough is Jesus. And we're going to find a little more of that glimpse here in this text where Jesus shows and he reveals to himself why he is enough and why what they're looking for is in him. So continuing in the story, verse 35 says this. By this time it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. This is a remote place, they said, and it's already very late. Send the people away so they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. I love this. So here's the disciples. Jesus just began teaching the crowd. He says, they're like sheep without a shepherd. They need somebody to teach them. And Jesus, what does it say? That he had compassion. Jesus is filled with compassion for his people. Because they're being taught things. They're religious people. They study, they pray, they do all of these things. Yet they don't have a shepherd caring for their soul. They don't have somebody looking out for their soul and somebody guiding them and really shepherding them. So what does Jesus do? I know the disciples were Jesus' apprentices, and so they were going to escape to get away, but Jesus is confronted with people that are hungry for something more in their life. And what does it say? Jesus had compassion. He cares for them. And so he stops. He sets his plans aside or the disciples' plans aside, and he says, we're going to teach. I'm going to teach and teach you these things and show you that I am your true shepherd. So as Jesus is teaching and teaching and teaching, then it's the end of the day, and the disciples, what do they come and say? They say, well, let's send everybody away so that they can go and get some food and get something to eat. And my guess is they're probably like, and then we can finally relax, right? They wanted to send the people away so they could begin to enjoy. Or maybe they just, you see in this text here, when they say, hey, let's give them something to eat, it says in verse 36, it says, send the people away so they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. So the disciples are saying, send them away. I love this. I couldn't find in the scriptures, Jesus doesn't send people away. He might set a high bar and some people end up walking away. But Jesus says, those that come to me, I will never cast out. So if people are coming to Jesus, Jesus isn't going to send them away. Sometimes he'll set a high bar and a very high bar, and sometimes people decide not to follow him. But Jesus doesn't say, get out of here, unless he's talking to the demons. And so Jesus is inviting them. He tells the disciples, he says, no, you give them something to eat. You feed them. And this, to me, this has so much to do with a lot of our life and finances. Now, if you're new to church, you're like, oh man, the church, I showed up on this day and they're talking about finances. And really, what Jesus often says, Jesus talks about money more than anything else. But I hope you understand what Jesus, when he begins to talk about sometimes our heart and security and the different things that we hold on to, really, it's a heart issue. So when Jesus says, wherever your heart is, wherever your treasure is, there your heart lies also. So where you put your money, that's where your heart is. So for example, a few years back, I had invested in Apple. I no longer own the stock. But when the news was going on and Steve Jobs was sick, I was paying attention to every single article that came out about Apple. Because I was invested in the stock where my treasure was, you better believe my heart was there too, right? I needed to know when I needed to get out and different things. And what? I found that I was beginning to worry. And so where your treasure is, there your heart is. If you invest in something, if you put money behind it, you will naturally care about that. And so you have to check yourself where your treasure lies. Your heart is going to be in it. So we know this. Intuitively, we know this aspect about what we invest in, we care about. Yeah, so it's so funny. Some of my background, I've helped people with retirement, and so I naturally just talk about finances. When you sit down with somebody and you look at their finances, it's just an open conversation. It hasn't been taboo for me. But it was so interesting. I came across an article by Dr. Fernham. And he mentions why he was trying to wonder. He had this article, not a Christian article, but he had this article. He had a degree in economics and had done his PhD at Oxford. And he asked the question, why is it so taboo for money? He says, we are more stars, and people in our society are more often willing to talk about sex and willing to talk about death and all of their intimate relationships more so than they are willing to talk about money. And I would say a big reason for that is what we have done as a people, myself included, is we end up turning something like wealth and we use it, and in our conversations, it ends up being just, it's so distorted, if you will. Because what ends up happening is in our conversations, we use wealth for power. We use it for status. We use it in Christian communities sometimes to condemn, oh, how could so-and-so spend their money this way? And how could they do that? And so we use this to kind of one-up each other in society and even in Christian communities. So then when we begin to talk about it, there's feelings of guilt and shame that come into it. My hope is, as we explore a little bit, this isn't just about finances this morning, but my hope is that as we begin to look at it, we see that it's a heart issue. And it's not just about what does the church want? Does the church need this or that? It's not about those things. But really, it's Jesus cared for his people. He said they are sheep without a shepherd, and they need some guidance. And so Jesus, too, wants to guide us, because he talked more about anything than finances. He wanted to guide our hearts and our minds and our money. Deuteronomy 14 says, tithing is to teach us to revere God, teaches us to put God first, because if you give to God and his kingdom, then your heart will follow. And so it teaches us God, everything that God gives us is his. And so he teaches us that. But let's look at this text, because what I find so interesting is that the disciples begin to say, well, let's protect our own comfort. And really, that's often what wealth has a lot to do with, right? Our security and our comfort. Yet it's so interesting. Studies show that the wealthiest nations are not the happiest nations. Our country's GDP continues to increase over the last 50 years, yet our happiness hasn't. In this country. What's with that? And they've shown America isn't, we are one of the wealthiest nations. We have an abundance in this nation, yet we're not the happiest nation. Why is that? And so what we begin to see is in, I think, our hearts, my heart, is in the disciples. The disciples say, well, send them away because we can't feed them. And then Jesus says, in the verse he says, I believe 36, he says, you feed them. Verse 37, sorry. He says, you give them something to eat. And the disciples, what do they begin to do? I love this. It says, they said to him, that would take more than a half year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give them to eat? I love Jesus' question. How many loaves do you have? So, they're saying, man, that would take over 200 days' wages. That would take 8 months. We would have to figure out how to provide for, and I want to know who figured that out exactly, right? They're looking at the crowd, and by the way, when it says feeding of the 5,000, back then they would only count men. So there might have been, with including women and children, there might have been 10, 15,000 there. And Jesus is saying, you feed them. In their minds, the disciples are saying, this is impossible. And then I love Jesus says, well, how much do we have? And the response is, many of you know it, when they found out, they said, 5 loaves and 2 fish. 5 loaves and 2 fish. Verse 39, then Jesus directed them all to have the people sit down in groups on the green grass. I love that picture of the green grass. And if you grew up in church, it's such imagery of Psalm 23, our great shepherd who causes us to lie down in green pastures, who takes care of us. So Jesus says, green, think about life and abundance. And so Jesus says, have them sit down in the green grass. And so they sit. And so if you're taking notes, or the first point in your notes, is sit down to receive. that we are called, Jesus says, have them sit down. In order to receive blessing, we have to sit down. Because we have to realize that God is our provider. Now, so interesting for me in my personal life, having grown up, being taught all about finances, and then spending some time in the financial industry, I loved to have all of my spreadsheets just perfect. You know, my emergency fund, debt, and all of these things eliminated, and I just loved everything just nice and clean. But always working for the church, I never made a lot of money. My family never made a lot of money, my dad being a pastor. And so I always had to be really tight with finances. But I found that I would often worry about it. Because the numbers weren't, I wasn't making enough for all the bills and everything coming in. And so I found my heart worrying. And when you start to raise a family and children, it's right to do these things. But I didn't like where my heart was. And so for 3 years, I'd asked people to pray for me. They said, how can I pray for you? I said, I worry too much about finances, and I want God to get rid of that for me. And my specific prayer wasn't to make more money. I didn't want to make more money because I knew if I would just make more money, then my heart wouldn't really get fixed, right? Because then the numbers at the end of the day would all line up, and then still my heart isn't getting corrected. And so I'd ask for 3 years, I'm still worrying about this, I'm worrying about this, I'm worrying about this. And during those 3 years, do you know what, and you'll hear this, and this isn't just my story, I hear this time and time again, there were times where our bills were greater than what's coming in, and we didn't have enough, but I continued to see God provide. I mean, you'll hear stories about this time and time again, I'm not making this stuff up, ask others, we would get random checks. Things would show up, a tax return we didn't know about, or just a random generous gift, cash, on our doorstep. No idea how some of these would come up, and I wasn't asking people for more money, but I saw time and time again, God took care of just enough of what we needed, and he provided. Do you know the scriptures talk about that Jesus, he clothes the lilies in the valleys. He takes care of, he knows even the birds, he feeds them, he makes sure they have enough food. He takes care of all of his creatures. Will God not take care of you? And so this sitting down, what does sitting down do? It causes us to sit down and realize that we cannot produce. There's something about receiving and realizing that God is our provider. So we have to then begin to reject all of the times we worry. All of the times, our fear, our anxiety. Why? Because God is going to provide. In order to receive, you have to sit down. If you are trying to run, running is good. They ran to see Jesus. But up to a certain point, there's an aspect in our lives that we can't produce things, and especially when it comes to faith. Because what does Jesus say in this text? In John 6, Jesus says, if we could pull it up, that Jesus says, he is the bread of life. He says, whoever comes to me will never grow hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. Jesus is preparing these people not only to receive real bread, he's preparing them to receive himself. The greatest blessing that you and I can receive is Jesus. And that blessing, that life, doesn't come from running. Yes, they came running to hear about Jesus. But ultimately, the scriptures say, it's a gift. Jesus himself to us is a gift. And so, as we see that God, not only does God provide for us physically, he takes care of us. He'll take care of the animals on this earth. And so, he too will take care of you financially. And so we cannot worry because why? When we place our hope in Jesus, it says Jesus promises eternal life. So we don't have to worry about, sometimes we hold on to our money here and we worry about all of these things, yet Jesus says, I will provide. I will take care of you, and ultimately you will spend eternity with me. The greatest joy is to be with Jesus. But we see as we look at this story, as they have them sit down at the next point to prepare for a blessing. Because here's an interesting aspect in the story. When Jesus goes to his disciples and he says, have them sit down, the disciples are empty-handed. They know they've got 10,000 people, but they only have 5 loaves and 2 fish. Now, if these people were told to sit down, they knew a meal was coming. They were told to get ready for a meal to come, and the disciples are probably freaking out a little bit. Sit down. Go ahead and sit down. And imagine there probably had to be a few grumpy people, right? Anybody get hangry? You're hungry and angry. Hangry. Right? Some of you. Okay, just me. That's my problem. But man, imagine some of these people. They're probably hangry, right? And these disciples are saying, hey, you better sit down. Sit down. And some of them are like, well, I don't see the food. And imagine what the disciples are like. I don't either. Yet, sit down, please. Jesus told me to. And so the disciples, really what we see in here is the disciples, if you're taking notes, prepare for a blessing. How are you preparing for a blessing? Jesus says to go and get ready to do something miraculous, and at the beginning, you won't have it. If you know God is calling you to do something, it will be greater than what you can do by yourself. God always seems to do that throughout scriptures. So he says, have them sit down, and you don't have anything yet. And so as they prepare and as they get ready, they took a big risk. They took a huge risk, and they said, all right, I'm going to trust. I'm going to do this. And I love this in verse 41, because really, well, I'll get there in just a second. Verse 41, I get excited about this stuff. Taking the loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks, this is Jesus, and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples to distribute to the people. I'll continue and finish the rest of the story. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of men who had eaten was 5,000. So everybody was full. They had so much bread that there were 12 basketfuls afterwards. The 12 basketfuls, it doesn't say directly, but it could relate to the 12 tribes in Judah and the 12 tribes of Israel and then possibly the 12 disciples. Each one of them filled the basket. Jesus took the 5 loaves and 2 fish, and it says what? That everybody ate and was what? Satisfied. They had enough. They were full. They were full and more than enough. Some scholars have tried to criticize this and say, well, each person just had a little tiny bit, and they just learned how to be generous. But you see, they have 12 basketfuls full, why can't you say that? Full of bread. Jesus had performed a miracle here. And a miracle, by definition, is something that's impossible. And the disciples, imagine the disciples, they got to be front row to this whole action. They're told, they're stepping out in faith, they tell everyone to sit down, and then they begin to give out the bread. Can you imagine this? They're passing out the bread, and it just keeps multiplying. Whether it was multiplying in their hands, or they would come back to Jesus, and he's got more, and they're like, whoa, more? We don't know how it exactly goes down, but we know that the disciples were amazed by this. And yet, at the same time, the disciples still didn't quite fully get it. You and I, we don't always understand that. You know what I love about that fact? The disciples, they got a front row seat. It says this, and this is interesting, in Mark's gospel, very different than a lot of his other miracles. A lot of the miracles say, and the people were amazed. It doesn't say that in this one. Because the people might not have even known that it was a miracle. I mean, think about how many miracles go on that people don't know about. I mean, the blessing of having this building and the faithful people at Wilshire and our building over there, the multi-purpose room, the land across the street, so many faithful people have given to Wilshire, and now people come in and are blessed and might have no idea about the sacrifice that was made by some of you and many people before a lot of us. the sacrifices that were made to bless others. And it says the people don't know about it. The people weren't amazed. Yet I'm convinced that God, because he wants to work in our hearts, who Jesus was really working on was the disciples. Yes, he was feeding the masses. What was he feeding the masses? Himself. But he was working on the disciples. And as they passed this out and they gave, they saw they themselves had nothing. But as they continued to give, that God was blessing the work. God was blessing everything that they were doing. And the disciples, because of that, got the front row seat. I think one of the examples that Jesus gives us in the last, second to last point, practice gratitude. Jesus, in verse 41, it says that he gave thanks to the Father. Jesus gave thanks to the Father before breaking the bread. He's giving God thanks before the miracle even happens because he knows and he trusts the Father in what's going to happen. You see that in verse 41? Taking the loaves and two fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. I believe and I'm confident that practicing gratitude in our lives transforms our life. Because when we're thankful for the things, it's why in Christian communities for centuries we've prayed over meals. Sometimes I've heard, well, Christians are just selfish. They're selfish. They're just, oh God, I pray that this food would be a blessing to my body. Maybe that's been distorted sometimes, but really sitting down and praying before a meal is, God, thank you. Thank you for the way that you've provided for me. Thank you for the ways that you have continued to be faithful, even though I have not been faithful. It's not how much you know and all the things, it's who you know. Because when you know the faithful one, he is the one that continues to provide. He is the one that continues to bless. And he is the one that continues to give despite our weaknesses. And so a practice of gratitude, Jesus is showing he gives thanks to the Father before the blessing even happens. Because our call is to continue to thank God for the things he's done. And when we thank him, we are reminded that this didn't come from ourselves. So do you see that the disciples really get a front row seat here? They get a front row seat to this miracle that Jesus is working. And then the last point looking at this is the blank plan, the distribution plan. The distribution plan, what is the distribution plan? It's two things. Jesus is about to do the miracle. He gives thanks to the Father. And then what? He works this miracle through the disciples. He has them pass things out. We, friends, if you call yourself a follower of Jesus, you have the opportunity to be a part of the distribution plan. What I love about this story is two things, and it gets really simple. If you're not tracking with me so far and all these different little details, don't lose these two things. Jesus gives, one, he gives physical food. The people are hungry, he had compassion on them, and so he feeds them. But he also gives spiritual food because the people were hungry, they were sheep without a shepherd, and they needed guidance, so he gave them teaching. But ultimately, what does he give himself? Himself. Ultimately, He gives them himself is what he gives him. And that is the greatest gift that he gets to give. And so we too, if you call yourself a follower of Jesus, you get to enter into one of the greatest gifts of all. And it's God's distribution plan to give physical food and spiritual food. To help partner with Gleanings for Hungry and to be part of this city and how we give and give generously and take care of the homeless and take care of those who are hungry. But also, part of the great distribution plan, what do we distribute? Is Jesus, if you will. Jesus, the bread of life, we are sharing with others about Jesus. And so God's distribution plan is the church. He uses the church, his beautiful bride, to share with others all about his wonderful son who gives life, and that's Jesus. And so the disciples get to be a part of spreading this. And really, we get to be a part of it by giving to the church. Why me and my family, why we give to the church? Because it is God's distribution plan. It's his plan to share the good news. I want to be a part of that. And one of the blessings that scriptures talk about is when we give, let's pull this up in Proverbs if we can. That Proverbs says when we hold on to it, says one person gives freely, yet gains even more. Another holds unduly, but comes to poverty. The promises in the scriptures is that when we continue to give and give sacrificially, God not only blesses that spiritually, but he also promises to bless that financially and to give more. This was just a silly story. The other day, I was with friends that were doing a fundraiser, and maybe this isn't even spiritual, I don't know, but I'm sitting here, and she was fundraising for a trip. And she had one of these raffle prizes, and half would go to her trip, and the other half would go to a winner. So they're going around and selling these raffle tickets. And I think it's so funny because these raffle tickets, they often do better. Why? Because somebody has the chance of winning. So people buy these tickets. So there's this big pot and this big prize. And I just went around, and I felt like after just praying, I was like, I'm going to take whatever, because half goes to the trip, and then half goes to the ticket winner. And I'm just saying, you know what? I'm going to give my half to her and just let her take it all. And so I'm going around, and I'm like, I just felt this. I was like, I'm going to win this raffle. I just had this confidence. I was like, I'm going to win this because I know I'm going to give it away, and that's going to be fun. And so sure enough, they call the name, and it was like, Rob, you won. I know. I know. And maybe I'm over-spiritualizing this, but I just knew in it. And so I said, hey, I'm going to give this all to you. And then me and my wife were there, and we're saying, hey, yeah. And she was like, well, keep some of it. Man, it was kind of tempting. It was like, well, maybe. I was like, no. I know God was sharing this to be generous. Friends, that is some of the fun. And to me, that just might have been a little blessing that God gave me. It doesn't always work that way. I'm not promising that. You're going to come to me, man, I spent 1,000 raffle tickets. And I lost. But I do promise this. I promise if you live generously, God blesses that. And I've seen that in my life time and time again, and it's fun. Because my heart, I've seen God transform my heart from worry, fear, and anxiety to joy, pleasure, and just being able to continue to give. Even though money wasn't coming in, just to continue to give it away and see other people's lives transformed physically and spiritually. People need food, they need shelter, they need basic things, and sometimes we have wealth to be able to give that. And the church that continues to share the good news, why have we been going over our sermon series, The Center? Because there is nothing other than Jesus that will give satisfaction. The people were satisfied. Why? Because Jesus was there and teaching. He gave them physical food and spiritual food. Would you be a part of that and enter into the joy that God calls us to give as we give freely? And it's a wild adventure, but I encourage you to join in that wild adventure, and I promise you'll be blessed in ways that you've never seen or experienced before. Would you pray with me? Father, we thank you for your word. Lord, maybe we've been trying to find satisfaction in the world. Lord, may we know this morning there is no satisfaction greater than you. We find our true joy, our hope, in you, our God, our Father. And we find that true joy in your Son who came and gave his life away. Father, as we take communion this morning, may we know that you truly are the bread of life. And Lord, as we think about that, may we too enter in to a life full of giving as you gave your life away. Father, may we follow you this morning. And maybe some of us for the first time, maybe we would be filled, we'd be full, and that we would come to you, Lord, here this morning, looking to be fed, that we would walk away full because we have you in our hearts. We ask that in your son's name. Amen.